Parshas Vayishlach, the mitzvah of Gid Hanoshe. It's one of the few mitzvahs that are found in Sefer Bereishis. This is the third of the mitzvahs in Sefer Bereishis. Gid Hanoshe is the sciatic nerve that is not allowed to be eaten. And therefore, since it is extremely difficult to be menacher, to treber, the Gid Hanoshe, we're going to see some of the halachas in a second and some of the philosophical ideas behind it. Therefore, in America, Chutz Laaretz, in most places, the rear quarters of the animal wasn't eaten at all. You couldn't get a T-bone steak, sirloin steak, they're all from the back of the animal. Everything past, I think, the 11th rib was already given to treif. And Schlachthuis had deals with treif, Goyish butchers and slaughterhouses, that they would take, the Jews would take the forequarters, and the hindquarters would go for non-kosher consumption. Conceivably, though, if you know how to do it, and again, it's a difficult thing, you have to traber out that nerve, plus we'll see some other parts there, and those who know how to do it and have a mesorah do it. And here in Eretz Yisrael, there are those that that traber meat in the hindquarters are used here, not necessarily for mahadrin, but for regular kosher. You can get a T-bone sirloin steak here in Eretz Yisrael that's kosher. Inu fought with the angel, and he was wounded in his thigh. So the Torah says, "Al kein lo yochlu bnei Yisrael es gid hanoshe." Therefore, the children of Yisrael, meaning his specific sons, did not eat, according to one opinion of the Gemara, did not eat from the gid hanoshe. But that's asher al kaf hayorech, which is on the round ball of the thigh. Ad hayom hazeh, till today, ki noga b'kaf yerech Yaakov b'gid hanoshe, because Yaakov was smitten in the gid hanoshe. After this, the Torah tells us Yaakov limped away from that fight until the sun rose, and then he was healed. And therefore, even though from before the Torah was given, the children of Yaakov themselves accepted this as a custom not to eat the gid hanoshe because of what happened to their father, the halacha that we don't eat is only because at the time of the Torah was given, God told us and prohibited us from eating it. Not because of what they did then, but from the fact that when God gave the Torah, he prohibited this. This is one of the prohibitions of the Torah. Now, the word noshe, gid hanoshe, simply means that it's nosha mimkomo. The word noshe means to be moved. It was moved out of place. When he was hit in the thigh, so it moved the sciatic nerve out of place. And I promise you, I'll give you something to eat. So here are pictures of an animal, both a photograph and the pictures. The photograph's not that clear of where this nerve is, where the gid hanoshe is. You can pass it around so you... Please don't eat it. Whoops. Okay, here's the other one. This is a photograph. Okay. A gid can be a tendon, a nerve... it's all any kind of those connective tissue. So here it's the sciatic nerve, and we'll see that it also is the saphenous nerve and femoral nerve also are part of what the gid hanoshe is rabbinically. Okay, let's see what this. Let's see first some of the halachas, and then we'll get to more of the. The gid hanoshe applies equally to behemoths and chayas. Behemoths are more domesticated animals. Chayas are non-domesticated animals like deer and so on, kosher. Even if the thigh is not rounded. By a human being, the thigh is rounded. By most animals, they're rounded. By most birds, they're not rounded. By a chicken, it's a flat thigh. So by animals, even if the thigh is not round, the gid hanoshe is prohibited. By birds, if the thigh is round, which most of the time it's not, then even the gid hanoshe of a bird is prohibited. If the thigh is flat, then by a bird, which is most of the time, is not prohibited. And the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to check to see if the thigh by a bird is rounded or not. You can assume that it's not. Okay. It is equal to both sides of the animal, the right leg and the left leg, the both thighs. And, okay, next, then the Shulchan Aruch says that there are actually two gidim, two nerves that are in the thigh. One is more inner and near the bone, and in fact it goes into the bone in certain places. Therefore, when you traber it, you have to mamish break the bone to get out the branches. And the second one is more outwards, right under the surface of the muscle of the thigh. And both of them are awesome. And you have to dig to get out all the branches. That's why it's so difficult to get it out. However, the inner one, the one that's closest to the bone, that's the one the Torah prohibited. And the rabbis, that's called the sciatic nerve. And the one that the rabbis prohibited was the outer one, that's called the femoral and saphenous nerve. It's an extension of the same nerve. And that's usher rabbinically. And the branches, which is called the knoknos, they're also prohibited, only rabbinically. And you have to also dig them out. Okay? And the shumen, the fat around the gid, is not fat that's prohibited, but the Jewish people accept it as a custom that they do not eat the fat that surrounds these nerves either, and therefore it's also to eat. The good gid itself has no taste. It's like a piece of wood. And therefore, if it falls into your soup, it doesn't prohibit the soup, because no taste can go into the soup or anything else. It gets mixed in with other kosher things. It's what comes from it can't prohibit those kosher things. However, the knoknos, the branches, and the fat around it does have a taste. And if that gets mixed in with your soup, then it's prohibited, rabbinically at least, to eat the soup, unless it's 60 times as much, and all the other halachas of when things get mixed in, kosher and treif. And lastly, the gid hanoshe is mutter bahano. You're allowed to sell it to a goy if you want. You can use it to feed your dog, if you want to feed him a gid hanoshe, right? If you want to use it for a tennis racket, you can do that too. It's usher, it's mutter bahano, it's mutter to have enjoyment from it. Okay, now, in the time of the Kresi Uplesi, that's Rabbi Yonason Abeshitz, there was a shochet who said that the accepted gid hanoshe is the wrong one. And he said because the real gid hanoshe only exists in male animals, not in female animals, and the one that's been accepted as the gid hanoshe up until that time was also by female animals. So he said it's only a nerve, or a tendon, whatever it is, that's in the male body of an animal, not the female body. And Rav Yonason Abeshitz said that's not true. And he brought a proof from the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvah Skadim, where it says, Mitzvah hazos noheges bein bisharim bein benikevos. This mitzvah applies equally to males and females. And everybody said what the Rav Yonason Abeshitz said is a terrible mistake, because the Smag is not talking about which animals it applies to. It's talking about which people it applies to, and that's found all over in the Smag and the Sefer Achinuch, that it applies equally to men and women. It's not talking about the animals. There's no proof from that Smag. So Rabbi Yonason Abeshitz gave a very brilliant, the Chasam Sofer gave a very brilliant explanation of what Rabbi Yonason Abeshitz meant. He said like this. It says, Al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael. No, sometimes we darshan b'nei Yisrael v'lo b'nos Yisrael. Only males and not females. Right? We learn that by b'nos Aaron. B'nei Aaron and not b'nos Aaron. Only the males of the Aaron can do the avoda, the kahuna, but not the females. So why over here, when the thing happened to a male, happened to Yaakov, and it says b'nei Yisrael, right, why do we include women? Why is this halach applied to women? Says the Chasam Sofer, wherever there is a logical reason to exclude women, then we learn the pasuk to exclude women. But where there's no logical reason to exclude women, then we don't learn that pasuk to exclude women. It says like this, if the gid hanoshe would only be in male animals, then it would seem to point that this is something for males. Therefore, I would learn the pasuk b'nei Yisrael to exclude females. But since we don't do that, and females are included in this prohibition, it's obvious that the gid hanoshe is in both male animals and female animals too. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. However, they found the original edition, one of the original editions that was written in the lifetime of the Rav Yonason Apshitz, and there's a correction there in his handwriting, where the printer or the copier, instead of writing Samech Hei Nun, which is Seder HaNikur, he wrote Samech Mem Gimel, which is Smag. And Rav Yonason Apshitz crossed it out, and on the side put Seder HaNikur. In the Seder HaNikur, it says openly that this mitzvah applies both to male animals and female animals. So the whole question was no question to begin with. It was just a mistake of a copier that wrote Smag instead of Sefer HaNikur, which is the book of Trebring. Okay. Hold the questions until we finish the thing. Another interesting thing about the halachas of Gid HaNasha, and then we'll go to the more philosophical ideas. The Rashba holds that, first of all, there's a question whether are you allowed to eat a human being? Obviously, after he's no longer alive, because that's murder if you eat him when he's alive. Okay, but is human flesh prohibited? Right. So there are opinions that say, and I don't want to go into now what the logic is between them, that the Torah prohibited animals. A human being's not an animal. And therefore, there's no prohibition to eat human flesh. Others hold there's just a positive commandment. You're allowed to eat these animals, not these. So these animals eat. That applies to human beings. But the Rashba holds there's basically no Torah prohibition of eating human flesh. So, therefore, urge to eat a person, you can't eat his Gid HaNasha. The Gid HaNasha of a human being is prohibited because of Gid HaNasha. Whereas the Rambam says that the Gid HaNasha of a human being is not specifically prohibited because of Gid HaNasha. It may be prohibited stam to eat human flesh, but the Gid HaNasha of a human being doesn't fall under this, even though the Gid HaNasha of a human being was the one that caused this whole thing, but it's only the Gid HaNasha of animals that's prohibited, not the Gid HaNasha of human beings. Okay. Now let's go to some of the more philosophical ideas. Okay. The idea that Yaakov Avinu fought with this angel, okay, according to many opinions, most opinions probably in Chazal, this angel was Sorrow Shel Esav. It was Esav's spiritual counterpart who came to fight with Yaakov before Esav confronted Yaakov physically. And that Malach, who was Esav's guardian angel, is the same Malach that we call the Satan. Okay, that Malach, the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, is Esav's personal Malach. Esav is the personification of evil in this world, and therefore his spiritual counterpart is also the personification of evil, the Satan. Okay, and he came to fight with Yaakov Avinu as a sign for all future generations that as long as we are in this world, we have to constantly struggle with the Satan who comes against the Jewish people and against the Yetzer Hara that comes against every individual. The Satan, the Yetzer Hara, the Malach HaMavis, all the same person. So, all the same angel. And therefore, it represents the struggle between the Jewish people and the Satan, and all of the powers of evil in the world through all our Golios, and it also represents the struggle that every individual has with his Yetzer Hara, with his, what's it called, evil inclination. Now they ask, why Dafke Yaakov? Why didn't the Satan come to fight against Avram and Yitzchak? I mean, they also represented very fine things. Chesed, Avoda, right? Why Dafke Yaakov? So Chafetz Chaim says, because Yaakov represented Torah. And the Satan can put up with Chesed, he could put up with Avoda, but he can't put up with Torah. Torah is the lifeblood of the Jewish people, and if you want to conquer your enemy, take away his weapons. You take away his source of protection and sustenance. So, therefore, the Satan came to fight Yaakov specifically. Thinking also another possible answer is that Chesed without Torah can be Gili Arayis, right? You can have Chesed in immorality and think that that's Chesed. The Isser, the prohibition of living with your sister, is called Chesed. Because originally God permitted Cain and Hevel to live with his sister so they could continue the world. And so Chesed can be, you know, propagating the world in prohibited ways. Or Avoda can be Avodah Zarah. There can be strange service too. It's only Torah that makes the Chesed real Chesed and the Avoda real Avoda. So the Satan was willing to forego Avram and Yitzchak, but once Yaakov came on the scene, then all the things became significant that he couldn't take. Now, where was Yaakov vulnerable? He came to fight against Yaakov as a symbol of Torah. So Yaakov himself wasn't vulnerable. But his thigh was vulnerable, which Chazal say, one idea is, that represents the supporters of Torah. The Satan may not be able to affect the people who learn Torah. But the people who support Torah can affect and make them weak in supporting the Torah, having reasons why not to support the Torah, whatever. That's what the Satan, what's it called, in the government package of economy, that's what the Satan mixes in, to make sure the Torah won't be supported. Okay. Now, and since we said that the Satan is this angel that fought with Yaakov, there's a hint to that. The word Hanosha, plus the four letters that make up the word, equals 364, which is the exact same numerical value of Hasatan, 364. And the reason why Hasatan is 364, because he has Shlita, he can control, he has a control over people for 364 days of the year. But the 365th, Yom Kippur, he doesn't have control. Meaning when a Jew is totally connected to God, like we are in Yom Kippur, then the Satan doesn't have control. So Yaakov Avinu was in total connection to God, except in that one area, and therefore the Hanosha, the Gid Hanosha, that was the place where the Satan had control. Now, hold on with the questions. I'll take them after I finish the... Okay. And therefore, there's another interesting thing about Gid Hanosha, that it corresponds to the four fast days. Since it has to do with the Satan and his control over us and his being able to at least harm Yaakov, so all that is hinted to in the fact that we went into Golus and we had the Beis HaMikdash destroyed. That's all part of this struggle with the Satan and being somewhat vulnerable to him. So how are the four Tzomos hinted? It says, Al-Kain lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael es gid hanoshe. The word es is Av Tisha, the ninth of Av. That's es. Gimel is the third day of Tishrei, which is Som Gedali. Yud is the tenth day of Teves, which is Asar of Teves. And if you add Gimel, Yud, Dalet together, it's 17, which is the 17th day of Tammuz. So in all those words are hinted all four fast days. Es, Tisha B'Av, Gimel, Yud, and Gimel Yud Dalet is Shivasa B'Tamas. Okay. And therefore, the Aruch Chaim says, that's why the Gid Hanosha has no taste. Because the truth is that evil, the Satan, is really a world of lies. It's a world, a false world. It has no taste to it. So the Gid Hanosha has no taste. And another thing interesting about the Gid Hanosha, we know that there are 365 prohibitions in the Torah. Each one corresponds to a different day of the year. The day of the year that Gid Hanosha applies to is Tisha B'Av. That is the mitzvah that corresponds to the day of Tisha B'Av in the solar year. Now the Sefer HaChinuch says that the idea behind this mitzvah is to tell us that even though we will have a difficult struggle throughout our history, there'll be Golus, there'll be Shmados, there'll be Holocaust, pogroms, and so on, suicide bombers, terrible suffering, but Klal Yisrael will survive, just like Yaakov Avinu. He was wounded, but he limped away, and he survived until the sun rose, which represents the coming of Mashiach, when the sun will rise on the world, and then we'll be healed. Now, the Rashbam says that, therefore, we don't eat the Gid Hanosha as a remembrance of Yaakov's strength in overcoming the angel in the end, and also the miracle that he wasn't killed. He fought with an angel and he wasn't killed. So to remember that miracle and the strength of Yaakov, which, as the Chinuch says, reminds us, Maisa Avos Simen Labanim, like Yaakov went through that struggle. The Jewish people go through their struggle, like he came out in the end, only limping, and eventually was healed. We will come out only limping and eventually be healed. Okay. And therefore, the Sfarno says an interesting thing. He said, normally when we want to remember something, we eat the thing we want to remember. You eat matzah to remember going out of Egypt. You don't not eat matzah, right? So why over here shouldn't we eat the Gid Hanosha to remember what happened to Yaakov? He says, no, what we're saying is the following. True, we were vulnerable. Yaakov was vulnerable in one area. But that area is so unimportant to us that we don't even eat it. We throw it away. Meaning that if you are vulnerable, you lose sometimes to the Yetzirah. The Jewish people have setbacks. If you take it too much to heart and you give up hope, then there's no hope. But if you say, look, the Jewish people, they can't harm us eternally. They can't harm us spiritually. They can only harm us physically. Sometimes it's tragic, very tragic, the physical damage they can do to us. Millions, innocent people. But we're not going to let it get us down. We're going to go on. Life goes on. The Jewish people go on. Eventually, we are going to overcome. And that is the, therefore, the, what, wherever the Satan has power over us, when we're vulnerable, we don't consider that too important. We discard it and we go on. Okay. Learn the lesson from it and go on. Okay, another thing is, it says that the Sefer HaBatim says a very interesting idea, and it fits also with this concept of Golus. He says that the reason the Torah commanded us not to eat the Gidan and Hagim, because Yaakov's sons, like we said, accepted this on themselves. They didn't eat the Gidan Asher. It was a custom in Yaakov's home, in his descendants, not to eat it. When the Torah was given, God said, I want you to enhance, strengthen that custom, I'm prohibiting it too. To show us the importance of keeping up tradition. And I think that that also relates to this. If we have a struggle with the Satan and its Golus, what is one of the strongest points of the Jewish people surviving Golus? Tradition. Mesorah. Knowing who you are, where you came from, knowing you have a rich past. And that way people who appreciate their past don't give up the present or the future. So, therefore, in fact, the Torah Tmima says that's why our minig is to name for relatives who have died in Golus in order to enhance the Mesorah. What we have in Golus is a very little anchor of continuity. You're in one place, then you're another place, people moving around the world, moving around countries. So in order to keep some kind of semblance of tradition, we name for relatives so you can trace back your roots through the names that we give our children. The Rashbam says, another aspect of this, that Yaakov Avinu wanted to run away from Esav. He wanted to not confront him. Okay, that's where he was running. He left his family safe, because he knew Esav had no bone to pick with his family, only with him, and he wanted to run away and not confront him. And an angel came, and according to some, it was Yaakov's guardian angel, not the Satan. The angel Michoel came, and forced Yaakov to confront Esav, which I think hints to us that you can't avoid the struggle. You can't run away from it. You have to face it. Right? Even though Golus is a very negative thing, but it's for our benefit, ultimately, that we go through that struggle, make the right choices, and we become stronger from it. So you can't run away from it. You can't escape it. The Emek Dover says another idea, which also I think is a hint to how to function in Golus. He says the fact that we don't eat the gid is always something inflexible and hard. And the Gemara says, La'olam yehi rach kekana, be flexible like a reed, soft like a reed, and not kasha kegid, and not hard like a sinew, like a nerve. So maybe that's why people call they have nerve, a lot of nerve. They're very inflexible people. So in Golus, that's one of the ways that we can survive, by being, what's it called, flexible, and not being able to adapt to new situations or whatever, and not being too inflexible, and then you get broken. Now, the Tosfos says another, and Sefer Hasidim says another idea behind the prohibition of Gid HaNasher. They say that it's to remind the Jewish people that Yaakov's children did something wrong. They left their father alone. You don't leave another Jew alone. If Yaakov would have had them protecting him, then the angel wouldn't have attacked him and he wouldn't have had this problem. He had the problem and he was vulnerable because he was all alone. And I think that also fits in with Golus. One of the strengths of the Jewish people is unity. When we're united, then we have less tzaras. When we're fragmented, then we have more tzaras. So it's the unity, the feeling of responsibility, one Jew for another, that helps us survive Golus also. Now, it should have been, the Chasam Sofer says another idea, why we don't eat the Gid HaNasher to remember what's going on. He says like this, really, Yaakov Avinu should have remained a lame person. And that would have always reminded him of this miracle. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu remained a kvad peh, right, years later to remember the miracle of what happened to him when he took the coal in his mouth and not the gold. Which Paro would have killed him had he taken the gold. You know the story with the crown, whatever. Okay. In any case. So, but Yaakov Avinu was a Kohen. He bought the Bechorah and he had to do the Avoda. And if he was a Balmum, right, if he was lame, he would have been a Balmum. So God had to heal him. But see, now he had no way of remembering the thing. So now, because of that, we don't eat the Gita Nasha as a remembrance. That's why God gave that mitzvah. He bought the Bechorah. That was the Kahuna. Zohar HaKadosh says that the Gid HaNosha, Nosha also means in Aramaic to forget. It makes a person forget service to God, to forget God. Why? That's where the Satan has his control, main control over a person. That's where the Yetzer Hara comes to a person. The Arkadis Yitzchak says that when the Satan fought Yaakov, he was strong in every area except that one part of his body where there was a weakness that the Satan had a control over. The Alshach says, Legabe Yaakov, that was specifically the one sin that he had, even though it wasn't a real sin, because the Torah wasn't given yet. But he married two sisters. So there was some stain in Yaakov's life, even though he wasn't prohibited, because the Torah wasn't given yet. But it was something the Torah was going to prohibit later. That was the only place that Yaakov had some blemish that the Satan could find a place to wound him. Now the Shaloh HaKadosh says, so if that's the case, that the Gid HaNasha is the place where the Yetzer Hara, the Tumah, can take a hold of a person and then spread to the rest of the body, you can understand why there are branches to the Gid HaNasha. 5 to the right and 5 to the left. Because they represent the 10 powers of Tumah that exist in the world. That's the Gid HaNasha, it's a power of Tumah. And therefore, if you eat that thing, it strengthens that part of the body. Right? That's usually an understood thing, especially in Kabbalistic things. Things correspond to each other. If you eat the Gid HaNasha, then your Gid HaNasha becomes stronger. And if it becomes stronger, then you're at the place where Tumah, things that are negative, in taiva, right, lust in the body, that's the source, and therefore you strengthen it. By not eating it, you weaken it. And therefore you have to dig out after it, because that's how you have to get rid of the Yetzer Hara. You have to dig after it. And that's why what's it called, both the right and the left are also prohibited. You have to stay away from it as much as you can. Now the Iker Tumah that is referred to here, it's right near the Mokum Ha'erva, and therefore it represents the Isra of Gilui Arayos, of sexual immorality. That's what the Gid HaNasha represents. And basically, we can refer that back to what we said before. Since we're talking about the struggle of Golus, what is the major factor that keeps the Jewish people separate from the nations of the world? And when we're separate, then we're Vayishkol Yisrael Vetak Lavadot. When we are separated, insulated from the nations of the world, then we're more protected, we're more secure. What separates us, be'ikr, from the nations of the world? Our morality. Kedoshim tiyu, be holy. Rashi says, prushim minho arayis, be separate from sexual immorality. That is one of the major being separated from sexual immorality is one of the major pillars of the Jewish holiness. And that's why the Bris Milah itself is what distinguishes us from the nations of the world. And even though Yaakov Avinu was healed, says the Or HaChaim, but the Satan's hold on that place in the body still holds a place. The physical ailment went away, but the spiritual vulnerability didn't go away. And therefore, it says a very interesting thing, says that a person who eats Gid HaNasha, sometimes his punishment is that he has to come back into this world, right? His soul comes back into the world a second time, right, to suffer in this world as an atonement, and he comes back in the body of a kedusha, a prostitute, because that's the antithesis of kedusha. Kedusha and kedusha. Here is somebody. Kedusha is where you are designated for holiness. And this is a woman who designates herself for immorality. It's a designation for immorality, the opposite of a designation for holiness. So that is more or less in word and in picture the concept of Gita Noshi. Okay, I'll take one or two questions and then I want to go on to finish the other thing. There should be time in the end. Yeah? What? Good? Okay. But we don't eat the Gita Noshi either. Yeah. Okay. Even the Sultan says Shiva. The Sultan is not a bad guy. He's one of God. Believe me, I know him very well. Yeah, it could be that opinion doesn't hold that it was a Sultan. But the Sultan is basically an angel who has a job to do. It's not a very appetizing job, but he has to do it because otherwise people don't have free choice. And his biggest hanoah is that you don't listen to him. He's not happy when you listen to him, but he has to do his job, you know, very, very well. In any case, okay. And therefore it says that when Yaakov asked him for his name, he said, "What are you asking my name for?" Right? My name changes according to my shlichus. And the Sultan has no set name. The Sultan comes in a million different disguises. In one generation, it's one kind of thing. Another generation, a different thing. To one person, this is the Yetzer Hara. To another person, it's a different Yetzer Hara. There's no set name for the Sultan, the Yetzer Hara. Okay, let's go to the next. In Parshas Vayeshev, yeah? No. Most birds don't. There are some birds that have a round thigh, but it's very, very unusual. Yeah? Yeah, the Gemara says that he on the road back from Lavan, he tarried in the road, and he could have been home earlier, and because of that, he was punished to a certain degree. Yes. True, but the since in a human being, that's the place where the taiva is. Eating the similar part of an animal strengthens that part of the human being. So if you eat that, what? That's Kabbalistically, right? It's not maybe not physical, but in certain cultures it's considered physical. If you eat somebody's heart, you get, what's it called? But Kabbalistically it's a spiritual kind of thing. Though every part of the body has a spiritual counterpart. And if you eat the animal part of that, it strengthens the spiritual counterpart of the Gita Nosh of a human being. What you eat, you are what you eat to a certain degree. Strengthens that part of you. Okay, let's go on to the next thing. The next